Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
You bartended and DJed at the same time.
I did. It was some nights I was the bartender, some nights I was the DJ. So it wasn't the same on both nights. I mean, same night wasn't both roles, but yes, maybe on Wednesdays they needed me to DJ. And I was probably a DJ more on the weekend than I was during the week, and bartended more on the weekday. So
but now that we know you have this skill.
It's been a lot of years, Melissa.
We need to leverage that in some way, shape, or form for the network. We'll have Mike help us to create maybe some music as we like get on stage at our next conference, or we'll see what we can do to leverage it for that. That
okay.
would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Mike, if I'm music. Right, was the Holiday Light Festival, is it the largest outdoor Christmas light display in the country?
It was at one point. I don't know if it still is, but it was at one point, as I told you through email. It was this is
one way in, one way out. I'm sure it was a mess.
Oh, it was brutal. Trying to get into the park and out of the park was just a nightmare, because it was a lot of big buses that brought people in, and it was awful traffic, as you probably witnessed when you went through
it. Yeah. It's an all day affair.
Yeah.
Interesting. I had no idea. Brian Traylor also wants a shirt. Brian, I'm so jealous of Tom's wardrobe and how much he's able to be branded. It's really awesome. So if Brian gets one, can you send one to me too? That would be great.
Just make sure Brian gets we call it a schmedium.
That's yeah, I can tell that you have to peel that shirt off of me for sure. If I even got it,
showing off the guns today.
I love it. Okay, speaking of guns, so we have an interesting football weekend coming up, right? Ohio State, the Buckeyes have an interesting game. How are you feeling about that, Tom?
Big matchup with Notre Dame. We're favored to win. It's in South Bend, so. We're going to find out between the two teams who's ready to be, you know, top flight in the country. I'm a little nervous about my Buckeyes, but we're going to see what they're made of tonight or Saturday night.
Yeah. Tom, Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I do feel a little better, Tom, after our performance last week. We've sort of put some stuff together that I didn't see the first 2 weeks. So I'll be biting my nails probably, but hoping for I probably dislike Notre Dame about as much as I do that team up north. So I hope to put a hurting on them, although I'll just take a W.
My wife may have to watch the game in a separate room because she gets far too anxious for these and tends to scream at the TV a lot. But we'll get her through it.
Yeah.
We got a Ducks fan with us, too. Hey, Ken. Do they play football in Oh, bless.
Shots fired.
We also have a very interesting game this weekend. We're playing the Noles, so I'm a little nervous, I'm not gonna lie.
They're coming to Death Valley, right?
Yeah.
And Clemson is unranked for the first time in quite some time, actually. So
I know. Thanks. We've our coach is amazing. We've had an amazing run. We have some growing to do this year, and our team's got great kids. So we'll, I'm sure give it our all.
I have a feel Seminoles might be ripe for an upset. I'm just saying.
I could say that the same about the Buckeyes. So we'll see. Oh, yeah. Matt, you like opened up this like wound. Matt Velasco is saying go Duke. It's a little too raw at this point. So thanks. Sorry.
The heart of September. That's how you know the rivalry start.
Yep. Okay, I gotta re-listen to Mortgage. Are we okay to go ahead and get started?
Let's do it.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. I'm Melissa Langdale, President COO of the Mortgage Collaborative, joined today by Tom Gallucci, our very own Tom Gallucci, SVP of Business Development, and a very special guest, Mike Cool with MGIC, who happens to be the coolest person at MGIC I know. Sorry, I did tell him I was going to use that joke. I love a good pun.
That's good.
Namesake aside, he really is the coolest.
So I understand, Mike, obviously that you are with MGIC, but I think you need to separate just a little bit. So I want to open up a little bit for you to say what you need to say there.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. It just, at least for the next 30 minutes, just know that any information provided by me during this show is for educational purposes only, and opinions expressed by me during the show are solely mine and not necessarily reflecting the views and opinions of MGIC. So I'm glad to get that out of the way. Let's get rolling.
All right. That sounds awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you to MGIC for the awesome partnership with the Mortgage Collaborative. We really appreciate you guys. Obviously, also providing some swag for Tom. but let's kind of go ahead and dig right in. Obviously, we've had our industry as a whole has a lot of challenges in front of us between inventory shortages, affordability, you know, kind of also being a challenge with rates where they are in inventory being as low as it is. Prices have maintained high, you know, prices have maintained kind of their kind of level. And so, you know, between high rates and prices not going down, affordability is still a challenge for a lot of people. And so we just love your insights. What are you seeing out there that may be helpful for us?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. First of all, thank you both for allowing me to be part of the call. I've been looking forward to it for some time since we got it on the calendar. So thank you for that. When I think about affordability, I actually think about kind of two sides to affordability. One, Melissa, you just spoke about, right? I mean, rates are up, prices are up, and they've both gone up substantially. And that's just challenged, I think, all homeowners with inflation to be able to afford buying a home or buying a jug of milk, right? So that in itself is certainly a challenge. I saw recently from Redfin that they said that entry-level buyers today need to make an annual salary of $64,500, which is about $7,200 more than it was at this time last year. So that's a substantial jump. Something else that I saw recently was that since 1965, home prices have increased 7.6 times faster than what income has. So one of those two seems like they have to change. Either the pricing has to come down or slow down, or we need better wages, right? So that is driving a lot of discussion and issue, quite frankly, in the American population. So
yeah.
The other side of that prong, I guess, would be serving the underserved. And I know this is obviously a big push for FHFA and the agencies. And I really think that starts with the home ownership rates themselves. And I just kind of bring them up here. U.S. Home ownership rate is sitting at about 66%. For whites, it's at almost 75%, just under. Hispanic or Latino is at 48.7%. So large drop. And for blacks, it's 45.2%. So we think about home ownership, and home ownership, in my opinion, is the greatest vehicle to wealth and building wealth in society. And so then I bring back up the wealth gap between the groups. And currently, the white net worth average is $184,000. Hispanic or Latino is sitting at $38,000. And blacks is sitting at $23,000. So just huge gaps here. And I think about the things that we typically try to do to address those gaps. And a lot of times it's creating product, right? We think there's a product to solve everything. And I would argue that's not the case. And I know at MGIC, one of the things that we've put together is what we call ARCs, which is awareness, readiness, community, and solutions. And we think that these are the pillars to serving the underserved. Again, it's not a product. Product's certainly part of it, but we need to get to the community stakeholders. We need to find the nonprofits, the lending institutions, certainly the folks that are on this call. We need to have a ton of collaboration, and it's going to take a lot of commitment and hard work. And I think that's probably one of the main messages I would challenge this group with is, let's look at ourselves in the mirror and find ways to find solutions. The affordability piece is what it is for now, right? The rates are what they are. The prices are what they are. But trying to close some of the gap on trying to serve the underserved is something that I think we all could hopefully take some pride in and look in the mirror and say, what am I doing? What is my institution doing to try and close that gap? So those are what I think about as it relates to affordability.
Yeah, I think, you know, gosh, you hit on so many topics there. You know, serving the underserved, just to kind of pull on the one that you talked about last. It's such a big challenge, right? It's ensuring that, you know, as you're growing your company and looking for opportunities to better serve the market, that you're doing it in a really intentional way. So, you know, having outgoing education, having also a plethora of products, like you mentioned earlier, I know that can be kind of the go-to solution, but having a breadth of products so that you can meet the needs of everybody is really important. You know, I know that there are a lot of, you know, you also mentioned something about the demographics of home ownership rates and the kind of the way that housing kind of builds into you know, that next level of financial freedom for each one of those individuals. Are there things that you're seeing that other lenders are doing to capture that you know, that audience more, or things that just, you know, in conversations that you're having with others that you've heard of that's working?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of them would be being engaged in the community, right? Again, it's not product alone. You certainly have the products to bring to the group, but you have to be engaged in the community. And if you're not using the various social media avenues to get access to those groups, quite frankly, looking at your loan officer group, and are you hiring loan officers that look like the community that you're trying to get access to, is really important. I think about it's Hispanic Heritage Month this month, and I think about that community. I mean, they don't trust financial institutions. They don't have a lot of trust, but they're the largest by far growing community in our world as it relates to trying to gain access to home ownership. So I just think we have to be super engaged with the communities that we serve, and we have to be purposeful about the efforts that we make to try and gain access to those groups. And so again, I think there are product conversations that need to happen, because there may be situations, again, going back to the wealth gap, I mean, there are definitely differences in what somebody can qualify for in some of those groups. And we just have to be mindful of that and find ways that we can educate, find ways that we can create product that's going to allow them to be successful, because a mortgage should be more than just a transaction, right? We're trying to set these people up for home ownership for life, right? We don't want them to come in and fail. We want them to be successful. So it could be that they're not ready today, but they will be ready tomorrow if we spend the time and effort in trying to educate them and make sure they understand what goes into it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And Mike, you make great points too. Just being well connected into the communities that you're trying to grow market share and serve. And, you know, there's a way, you know, to recruit from an originator standpoint, but also to set your team up with those centers of influence within the community and be able to speak and market to the communities that you're trying to drive into in a relatable fashion. It's a bit of a plug for MGIC, but being Hispanic Heritage Month, I did notice you guys have put out some great resources just recently to help lenders from a marketing standpoint to the Hispanic community too, because we've talked about that in multiple past conversations that the Hispanic community is so diverse just within its own right. And you can be, you know, they're under communicating based on what segment of the community that you're looking to engage with in your metro. And I think you guys in particular do a fantastic job of really arming lenders and originators with resources to help arm them to better, you know, educate and serve their communities.
Yeah, thanks for that, Tom. We definitely have a ton of materials from a marketing perspective that folks can go in and co-brand and use in gaining access to referral sources that are in that marketplace. I'm actually headed down next week to the NAREP convention. It's their annual conference. It's a big conference. So if you're going to be there, look me up. I'd love to catch up with you. But if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind just sharing how large this group is. Just a few stats that I kind of took down. Currently, there are 62.6 million Hispanics living in the U.S. This next one's kind of mind-blowing. Latinos are expected to make up 70% of home ownership growth over the next 20 years.
Wow.
70%. So I guess I would say to you, hopefully there's a little bit of a wake-up call, and hopefully it's just a reminder because you're already doing it. But if you're not putting a program together to gain access to this community, I would challenge you. You might want to look in that direction, because that is a group that is continuing to grow. According to NAREF, currently there are 7.9 million Hispanics that are mortgage ready, and another 2.8 million that are near ready to purchase a home. And just in the last decade, they formed 628,000 new households in the U.S.
Wow.
So I could go on and on with the number of statistics that shout at the top of the mountain that we need to be paying attention to this particular segment of the population. And there are great opportunities to develop relationships across your communities, hopefully starting with realtors, right? To show that you are engaged and that you are serious about trying to offer services to that segment of the population.
Those are really great stats. And definitely eye-opening and the focus, you know, of a lot of our lenders and where that needs to be over the next couple of years. That's fantastic. I want to pull to, you know, obviously how people buy, particularly in times where affordability is a challenge, and how our loan officers that might be with us today are having to kind of think outside the box and be really consultative in nature to each of our, you know, customers that they're dealing with. Are you seeing, you know, back in the day when I used to sell, and I think a few people on the call were they knew me back then. You know, I used to see a lot of kind of single premium finance demi or kind of split premiums. As we've kind of shifted the market a little bit to be, you know, in more of a competitive market, as people are kind of looking for volume in each of the markets that they serve and looking for ways to better serve the communities that they're in, are you seeing people leverage those particular products more, or are you still seeing most everybody go with kind of the monthly MI opportunity?
Yeah, good question. I would say that they are not doing singles much. I think as the MI industry looks at singles, I mean, I think back mid 2000, say 13, 14, 15, there was a lot of business done in LPMI specifically. In some cases, upwards of 25% of the business was in that category. And the agencies came out with PMIERs, private mortgage insurance eligibility requirements, which required the MIs to hold more capital for a lender-paid single. And so we did see at that time some shift to borrower-paid singles because they are cheaper than a lender-paid single. But generally speaking, we're talking single digits now as a percentage, especially you think about lender-paid, beyond the fact that it's more expensive now than what it used to be. You're also looking at higher rates, right? So if you're going to increase the rate to pay the premium, which in some cases that's what happens, and you're taking a high rate and already and then adding more to it, which a lot of times the borrower is not interested in that. So I won't say it's not being done, because there are folks that do single premiums as a way to separate themselves, or maybe just in a consultative situation where they're giving their folks a better option. One thing that we have seen, this is something newer for us, I think it's the first premium type change or new premium type that we've come out within 25 years, but we have a product called Choice Monthly. And Choice Monthly, if anybody's familiar with splits premiums, which don't get much activity either, less than singles for sure. But Choice Monthly is a more flexible split option. Basically allows your borrower to take advantage of any excess money that might be out on the table from a seller or from a builder or any other third party, quite frankly, where you can pay some of it in a single premium, which then reduces the amount of monthly that you have to pay, of course, on a monthly basis. So we are seeing some activity there, although I would say certainly when we move to a buyer's market, which we haven't really been much in lately, we get into a buyer's market, I think that will have a lot more play.
Yeah, I agree. You talked earlier about kind of the inventory shortage and you know the challenges that that's presenting as a whole. You know, if you think about hopefully at some point this will kind of shift to a little bit more of a buyer's market, but who knows? If inventory remains as low as it is right now, which I think right now we're at a 1.5 month supply the last time I looked, which a healthy market is 5 or 6 months, right? So, you know, if we stay that low, most people think about kind of home building being the option, right? Maybe our home builders can kind of help to fill that gap. Are you seeing anything with home builders that are helping to fill that gap, or maybe even ways that they're partnering with lenders on maybe doing some concessions and things like that to help get more people into homes?
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly enough, the number I had seen most recently was the number you quoted at 1.5. Actually, NAR came out this morning and said that we're up to now 3.3 months.
Okay.
Supply, which still is well below the 6 that we should be at in a healthy market. Yeah. And there's a couple of contributing factors. Probably the biggest would be coming out of the crash, the Great Recession. From 2010 to 2019, we built fewer homes than we built in any decade back to the 1940s.
Yep.
And so that put us in a major hole because we didn't stop having home buyers, right? And mm-hmm. and so that continued to put us at a deficit. And quite frankly, now we've had 14 straight years below the 52-year average on single-family home units completed. So we just have continued to build a little bit of a hole to quite frankly, we can't make up quick enough. And the builders are certainly building many more homes now than what they have in the past. They're in a great spot, quite frankly, because they do have the ability to build homes, and lumber's come back down from where it was there at the high spots that stopped them from doing things. But I do think there are certainly plenty of options moving forward. The problem there is, depending on the type of home that you're trying to buy, it's $100,000. I heard from the National Association of Home Builders, $100,000 just before you put the shovel in the ground. So it's hard to build an affordable house when you've got that kind of regulation and cost and fees that are up against you.
It's also a three-year time frame, right? Between, you know, dirt to actual home, right? It depending on the municipality, you've got kind of 2 to 3 years that they're having to, you know, kind of invest in that land before they can ever even kind of see a return. And so you've got timing as an issue and then the affordability, because they're basically building out all the infrastructure for the neighborhood as they develop it. And in a lot of cases for the city or the municipality, the county, depending on where it's at, as well, because they've got to put in water and sewer and roads, and they've got to widen roads in some cases. And so those kind of impact fees are adding to that $100,000 that are a part of that $100,000 that you just mentioned, which is a big challenge.
Yeah. The other thing I guess I would throw out there, and this one doesn't get as much publicity, but it's a fact. And the GSEs, obviously, when we came into the pandemic, created the foreclosure prevention programs, right? I mean, we had forbearance, and you can argue whether there were people that took advantage of it that didn't need it, right? There's certainly documented cases of that. But they've kept going with foreclosure prevention actions. And just this year, we've had almost 106,000 home buyers that have been put into some sort of a foreclosure prevention action. And while that's great for that homeowner, that would have normally been pre-pandemic inventory that would have gone through foreclosure, right? And then there would have been new stock for people to purchase. And so that's also attributing to the shortage of inventory is that. So,
Mike, we've got a great question in the chat that I want to highlight. Terry Evans asks, could you do a quick overview on which are best options in today's current market with the potential of lower interest rates / refis in the future, and how MI relates and the various MI payment options like LPMI, monthly, split, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll do high level. And if anybody has any direct questions, they either come to me or they can reach out to the local account manager. But think about monthly is 90-some% of the business that's done today. It's just easy. It's what we've done forever and ever. It's easy to explain to a borrower that it's in your payment And when you reach a spot where it can be canceled, you can cancel it, right? So monthly is what most borrowers do in today's market. Singles, you have borrower paid singles, which are typically non-refundable. And you bring up the refi situation. I would argue today, if I'm a loan officer, I'm doing a loan thinking about I'm going to do two loans, right? I'm doing a loan today at 7%+. I'm probably going to refi you as soon as a rate becomes advantageous for you to do that. So I'm trying to do that. With borrower paid single, you are in a non-refundable situation. So if, let's say, for instance, the rates dropped, if you listen to MBA, they're saying that rates are going to be down to 6 by the end of the year. I'm not certain I buy that. And in the 5s next year, if that happened, we're going to see a big refi move. And for those singles that were done, they're non-refundable. So you don't get that back. You can't come back and say, hey, I did that borrower paid single and it was $4,000. Do I get that back? You don't. I mean, it's non-refundable. So that would be something I guess I would throw out to consider and think about when you're putting your borrower into a program, especially if you choose that non-refundable option. You can go with the refundable option, but it's much more expensive than what you typically put folks into today. 99.9% of borrower paid singles today are non-refundable just because of the sheer price of it. So I would keep that in mind. The lender paid side, again, that's typically where you're going to raise the rate or the lender's going to fund it in some fashion, where you raise the rate to cover the cost of that single premium, which again will be more expensive than a borrower paid single premium. So again, in today's rate environment, that might be a struggle and a challenge to get people to qualify with a lender paid single in today's environment. Splits have been one that have really made me puzzled over the years because we've had them for a long time. And I don't think it has ever reached 1% of any MI company's production in splits. It just, again, it operates really like FHA and it just has never caught on. So so now that they reference the choice monthly, that again, I think is got a major play, less so today in a seller's market, but in a buyer's market, there is a real play for choice monthly that I think folks need to pay attention to. So hope that's been responsive.
Great. Yeah. Terry says, thank you.
Yeah. And Mike, along that front too, just thinking of the expansion of equity that has taken place with rising home values, probably largely due just to the lack of inventory. You're seeing higher MI cancellation rates because of that with a lot of homeowners in recent memory?
There certainly have been. I mean, I think folks have taken advantage of the ability to cancel the mortgage insurance. One thing I'll say, because this is a common question, we are not the controller of canceling MI. It's the servicer of the loan. We get that question a lot. So that obviously is driven based on the rules that the Homeowners Protection Act have set out there and each institution's interpretation of the Homeowners Protection Act. But we have seen some of that. But the volume, Tom, has been so heavy over the last 4 years, call it, less so obviously the last year and a half. But we've been able to add to our book of business. And with rates in the 2-4%, our book continues to build because rates now are north of 7, right? So unless you have to move, you're not.
So, precisely. And yeah. it limits the consumer's ability to be able to put down 20% or something sufficient in that case. And I do want to give a shout out earlier between your guys' stance on the inventory out there. Mark Renault makes a great point here, the 3.5. And Melissa, you kind of dug into this too. Doesn't take into account the 60% of homes that are under construction, therefore not for sale. So that 1.5 number and 9 months inventory pretty spot on.
Yeah, no, fair point. No doubt about it. One thing that does concern us in today's market, I don't know how many people caught it last month. We passed $1 trillion of credit card debt for the first time ever. And so we, during the pandemic, we saw, all of us probably did. I mean, we couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't do anything. So our savings was something that we continued to build. And unfortunately, what we have seen is we think in the third quarter, at some point in the third quarter, early fourth quarter, all of that excess savings will have been exhausted. So we've lost all of that. And again, I think you see it with that credit card debt, the highest it's ever been, over $1 trillion in debt on the credit card side. So something to keep our eyes on.
Great point, too. And I honestly find that surprising that we don't, as a result of that, see more of an uptick in home equity volume. Just thinking pre-Great Recession, how much equity volume or refinances were done to consolidate consumer debt in the past when it was at previous record highs.
Yeah, I think part of that, Tom, is that the values have gone up so much. And I think lenders coming out of the Great Recession are probably a little bit nervous that that's maybe not real. And if I allow you to take all your equity out of your house and then values go down, that's just a problem for everybody, quite frankly. So I think there's been hesitancy in the lending community to do some of the home equity lending. It's not certainly as available as what it used to be in the past. So
if I also, there's a layer of kind of credit card debt, and that $1 trillion is significant. So please don't get me wrong, but there is a layer of consumer behavior that also has shifted.
Great point.
You know, with credit card companies offering, you know, points and cash back and, you know, all of those sort of things that we've seen people kind of naturally shift to just putting things on their credit card, but they pay more of it off. So I would love to see a statistic that would help us to kind of bridge to better understand that consumer behavior. Is this trend more of something that should lead to delinquency rates, or is it something that is just a shift in consumer behavior? But it is a significant number nonetheless.
Yeah, no, fair point. Right, we're all trying to game the rewards systems, right, to try and get points and things that we do. I think until there's a material change in unemployment. I mean, unemployment's still at a super low number. I mean, I think they say that a healthy market is somewhere in the 4.5 to 5% unemployment, and we're in the mid threes. So until that changes, I think we're probably okay. But certainly inflation has pressed that a little bit, right? Because people are spending more on things than they did before. So
it looks like Keith was thinking the exact same thing that I was. So thanks, Keith, for putting that in the chat. And guys, we are right up at time. We've had so much fun talking. We ran out of time. But before we go, I want to make sure that we ask everybody, what are you going to do this weekend? I know we got some football plans in the mix. Mike, what's on your agenda?
Yeah, my wife and I are going with two other couples down to Red River Gorge, which is in kind of south, more east, but southeast of Lexington, Kentucky. And renting a cabin and just kind of doing the wilderness thing for a couple of days. So we're super excited about that.
Oh my gosh, I'm jealous. That sounds amazing.
That'll be a fun getaway. Before I get my weekend plans, I do got to give a shout out to MGIC, to the original mortgage insurance provider with more than half of our lender members. I researched this in advance of the call. Having relationships with MGIC, which is more than any MI provider out there. So if you're not partnering with MGIC, plenty of TMC fellow members to leverage for your experience. So for me, outside of Buckeyes, I'm going to exit my golf sabbatical of nearly 2 months and get at least 9 in tomorrow after coaching flag football for my son in the morning. And then we'll see what happens with the Browns on Sunday.
That sounds like a really fun week.
What about you, Melissa?
Yeah, Melissa, how about you?
I have a little bit of golf in. We're gonna play 9 holes Saturday after the Tigers play. So we have a really late tee off. And then I have some just family time on Sunday. Nothing huge. We're gonna go out to eat at a nice restaurant downtown Austin. So that's it. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate you and MGIC and all that you do for our network. Thank you for sharing all of your amazing expertise and insights with us today. It was really, really valuable. And I hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. I will not see you next week, but Tom will be here and will be leading our helm next week. And we hope to see you guys all then. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you all.
Great weekend, everyone.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.